All right, we are back. As promised at the top of the program, we're going to bring back to the show educator Mark Mattingly, who we've spoken with many times in the past. He is, he's been an instructor in the field of poli-sci and history for many years and had the dubious distinction of teaching me those subjects back in high school. And to that I say, welcome back to Radio Parallax, Mark Mattingly.
Thank you very much.
Now, we talked to you before the election, and we were all on pins and needles about what was going to happen. Well, we've now seen what happens, and I just throw it to you on the floor. Where, what are your thoughts?
Well, it was extremely disappointing. There was always a fear that Trump could win, but there wasn't the belief among most of us that it was going to be so one-sided that he would take both houses, that he would get the majority of the votes, and there was not going to be any contested problems at all. So from that aspect, I was yes, you know, for all the years that I've been teaching and studying, you know, the American government, I wasn't ready for that big of a swing toward him after January 6th. I mean, to me, if they had a commercial in every state that the Democrats were running every candidate, it was like a 10 or 15 second intro just showing what was going on then and saying, you know, insurrection or whatever, then going into the topics. How people forgot about that, I don't know, or they don't care, which is even scarier.
Well, I remember back in the day when Nixon was president and you were teaching me the subject of history, Nixon said, yeah, the public remembers scandals for about 2 years, and that's about it. And that seems to be the case here.
Well, I guess. Watching that day and what happened and the closeness that people came to being actually caught by that mob, and who knows what would have happened to like Nancy Pelosi or even the vice president. I mean, you know, I mean, Pence and his family were there, and Trump sitting on his hands and wanting chaos to occur. So in the background of that, I didn't expect this many people to forget about it and just vote for him. But maybe your comment about Nixon is true. I mean, his comment is valid, you know.
Well, I think for me, the greatest disappointment out of all of this, among the many disappointments, is the fact that Trump was never held legally accountable for inciting a riot to overthrow the U.S. government. And that's what really sticks with me.
All of the above, yeah. It's, he did so many things wrong illegally, and he's getting away with it. And we're not going to be able to do anything about it because he's now president. He's going to pardon himself, probably. You know, I don't know what's happening there. But my disappointment also is, or a reality, kind of reality check, two different things. Number one, I was disappointed that so many Democrats didn't show up to vote.
Right.
Why? Because we have a black woman. I don't know. Why? Because they don't care anymore the way, you know, the base is different. I mean, so many unions supported Trump, you know, it was kind of an odd change finally where the watershed moment that way. So there was that going on. And there was the Hispanic vote that kind of went to him, and it was abortion perhaps because they're Catholic, even though they're the ones being deported. You know, I live in a building where we have about 10 women. It's about 300 units here, and it's a senior living facility. Mm-hmm. And I have my own apartment, but they clean it for us. You know, it's one of the services we get. The 10 women, not one of them speaks English. And I was told, talk to the head person. She speaks English and can translate if you need something done in your place. Why don't you speak English? Because you're a citizen? I don't think so, but I could be wrong. But, I mean, it's going to disrupt so many people's lives in so many ways. It's not the Nazis coming in necessarily in the 1930s and early 40s and taking people out of their houses and putting them on a boxcar. But in so many ways, there's so much of an analogy here that you could look at and parallels that these lives of these people are going to be, and then the people that are going to be asked to do it and on and on and on. So that's a whole nother, you know, issue to discuss. But so that's another thing that's kind of sitting there with me, knowing what's going to be happening in the future. And again, the Hispanic vote went much more for Trump this time than the last time. So that was disappointing.
It seems like a head scratcher. A friend of mine who has work crews that work for him who are largely Latins, Latinos that are, you know, have been here for a while, they were uniformly, I guess, against the idea of more asylums being offered to people from like Venezuela, other countries, because they felt that these people would take their jobs. They hadn't been here that long, which is an angle I hadn't really thought of, but I guess that played into all this.
Exactly, exactly. When this is a long time ago now, but it was Florida when they were bringing over, you know, Cubans back when they were opening it up and all that stuff was happening. A number of blacks were against it in Florida because they had all these jobs. And I remember I was showing a video on PBS to my students, and they were saying, you know, we have these jobs where we clean these buildings or whatever, and we have the contract, but they're going to underbid us. You end up, you know, with the lowest groups fighting each other over a little bit of crumbs, you know. So that's right. You're right about that.
Well, I guess the future starts in 5 weeks when Trump gets sworn back in to be the 47th president. And I guess, having studied this your whole life, I'm hoping you have some answers that I don't about, like, what mechanisms are really going to be in place to check some of the worst excesses of what we fear. What can we do to stop this?
Both houses are not hugely one-sided, Democrat-Republican or Republican-Democrat. So hopefully there's going to be some Republicans that come from some of those states like New England, where they can be different than Trump because it's morally they want to be there and not worry about losing their job, which these Republicans, that's why they haven't said more all along. So it's going to be harder to get some of these things through, including some of these appointments that he's appointing.
Like, I think of Matt Gaetz, that apparently there was enough Republican opposition to Gaetz to where he pulled out.
Right. So who's going to replace him? Is it going to be like...
Probably someone worse.
That's the other problem we've got. I mean, right. You want to dismantle the Department of Education, but, you know, my son, who was retarded, was born, and a month later got spinal meningitis and was in a diaper, and he died at 22, and he was in special ed classes his whole life. That's federal money. That's the Department of Education, because local school districts don't have enough money
right. To
put in a classroom, you know, three aides and a teacher with seven kids that have all kinds of physical and mental disabilities. You need a lot of money to do that. So what's going to happen to that? That's why private schools don't take those kids.
Sure.
Those kids end up in public school because it's too expensive to do that kind of thing. And they don't offer those programs in private schools. So anyway, so what's going to really happen to those kinds of programs and those people? I mean, I can tell you right now, it's hard enough having a handicapped kid or a kid with all kinds of special needs, and you've got help. But if the government's turning its back and there's no money for the schools to take care of them. Anyway, that's just one small thing that's bothering me based on my own knowledge of that. But all these departments, you know, inspecting our meat and inspecting the air and all that kind of stuff, yes, we can cut all that stuff out. Thank you, Musk. But what's going to happen?
Who wants clean air and water? Not me. Let's stop those regulations that keep our environment pure.
Right. And Kennedy, you know, having him as a non-vaxxer and he saw his father and his uncle assassinated on television. He had alcohol problems and cocaine problems. His second wife committed suicide based on his hounding of her, apparently. He's got all kinds of issues. His whole family has disowned him.
Well, with good cause. I mean, he's not the guy I want to see at head of the NIH or Center for Disease Control, but that's what I guess is in our future.
I mean, putting the whale head on his car back years ago, the bear, all that stuff. I mean, these guys would not make it in a regular hearing for any other time in the past. So I don't know what this means about the future and what Trump's going to do to all these protocols that we just kind of take for granted. You know, if it's not written down, he doesn't care, you know. And if it's written down, he might not care. So that part scares me.
Well, looking ahead, two things I think of, which I'd like you to play off, is the fact that, you know, when they founded this country, there was great concern by the founding fathers that a demagogue could come along, sway public opinion, get everybody all riled up to do things that maybe were not well thought out. And in this, there's a certain amount of inertia that was built into the system, which we've all found frustrating over the years. We want to see immediate change. But right now, that looks like one of our best friends in going out and making sweeping changes.
You know, the 60s, which you were one of my students in, it was a time when the liberals were so upset that it took forever to get things done, and they wanted, you know, to deal with all these progressive issues. And the Republicans are dragging their feet and making it hard to get through Congress. So the Democrats have that chance. And 2 years from now, we're going to have another election of 435 members of the House. And normally it goes the other way, unless lots of good things are going on. And I don't see how they're going to benefit people that need help. I think there's going to be a lot of issues going on by 2 years from now that he's not addressing. But the Ukraine, for example, what's he going to do with that? You're going to just, we're not going to give you any more help and let Russia just do what it wants to? You know, I don't know.
I'm hoping the Europeans will step up to fill the void there.
Yes, and you know, and Trudeau and Macron are already coming over and kissing. I mean, in his view, they're kind of kissing up to him, but they're just being smart politicians. Telling the king he's got a lot of clothes that look cool, you know, instead of, you know, the opposite. So we'll see how that goes. But I'm worried. Well, and I think our country has gone through a divide of changing Democrat and Republican voters. I taught you that Republicans are white-collar people that had college degrees that were conservative, but were, you know, but in foreign policy, they were open-minded in the Rockefeller world and all that stuff, and that the Democrats were labor unions, and they were working, and they were the ones that had eighth-grade educations or high school diplomas, but they weren't college-educated. Today, Trump's got all these people voting for them that are not educated, and they don't understand much about how government works. And in the meantime, those of us that have educations tend to vote Democratic, which you know, including the white collar, you know, the workers that were Republicans, you know, 50 years ago. So there's a shift going on, but there's more of them than us.
Yes. One thought that came to me looking at some of these documentaries that are coming out now about all this, one of them was showing 2016 when Trump was elected, the nefarious characters, all of whom were against, say, the Department of Education. Well, we'll put that guy in charge of the Department of Education. And again and again, right, and again, anti-government people. The one thing that's different now is that Trump is assiduously collecting a crew to put in place that owes their loyalty to him. And that means that there's going to be considerably less competence among the people put in charge, which I hope, again, will work toward them not being able to achieve their goals.
He also has a list of the people from the lawyers and whoever's been that have been trying to point fingers of what he's done wrong, and he's going to go after them. And I think this is why Biden, you know, because Hunter Biden has not been arraigned and gone through like a sentence yet. And I just think that he decided that with all the stuff going on behind the scenes that I better get my son out of there before I leave and they come in and give him life in prison or whatever it would be, you know. That's what's going to happen. I think there's going to be lots, like the prosecutors that in New York and all that. I mean, he's going to go after lots of people, and he's got a list of them, apparently. And so we'll see how that goes.
Well, he's planning to fight a lot of battles on a lot of fronts. And he proved already the first time around that he couldn't even get things done like building a wall on the Mexican border. So that's, you know, he's probably going to be very overextended in these fights. We can only hope so.
I don't know how much of that wall is built, but I read somewhere that only like about 2% of the border has got that wall or something. And so it would take billions of dollars of our money to really put a wall in there. And I don't think we have that kind of resources anymore to do that as a nation, and we should be putting it into obviously so many other things like, you know, creating jobs that deal with climate change, et cetera, et cetera.
Buckle your safety belt. It's going to be a bumpy ride. and I don't know. None of us really know how this is going to play out in 2025, but I anticipate us doing the show into next year. And to that end, I would say when we start to see what's going down, why don't you come back again and we'll talk about it then.
Right. And we didn't mention yet tariffs, but you know, I taught economics, and you know what tariffs do, and
sure.
We know what happened in the 20s and the 30s when we had too many barriers, and we ended up in a world depression. And so I just can't believe that if he's going to put 25% tariff against Mexico and Canada, who's going to benefit from that?
Well, one would assume that business interests, who are extremely powerful, will at some point step up to say, well, wait a minute, this is not a good idea.
Right.
We can only hope.
Elon, maybe Elon will help him out.
Yeah, we haven't gotten to him yet, and I think we'll just let that one slide.
The cartoon that has him sitting in the Oval Office chair, and Trump's trying to pull him out, and he goes, I bought this.
I haven't seen that.
And that's the scary part. You know, Trump has allowed money that way. I mean, they all do, but this is nothing but that kind of a game these guys are playing. So yes, it'll be interesting to talk about this in the future.
In closing, I would say that somebody said, some wag once pointed out many years back that, you know, a good, honest politician was one that once he's bought, he stays bought. And Trump has never really conformed to that. I mean, he will turn his back on anybody. So these people that he's supposed to owe a great debt to, they may not get paid back.
Yeah, where's Vance? All these pictures of him having McDonald's burgers with everybody, Vance is nowhere to be seen.
That's true. And I did, you know, he did manage to get RFK Jr. to chow down on a McDonald's burger, so, you know.
I think it's going to be too many bad things for us to laugh too much, but hopefully there'll be some fun in this too, so I don't know.
Well, it's always a bountiful time for political comedians, so I'm sure they're happy with some of this.
Jon Stewart is taken back. He's coming back, I guess, permanently for a while.
And Will Durst, our America's foremost political comic, has, I think, largely recovered from his stroke. And so I'm somewhat optimistic we can bring him back on our show back in 2025. I certainly hope so.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be great.
Mark Mattingly, always a pleasure. Look forward to talking again after it all starts.
All right. Well, thank you for calling.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
All right, in the time we have left, I think we should make some effort to try and find something to be positive about. And to that end, I think we'll go to a report that was on MSNBC where they talked to Maria Ressa, the 2021 Nobel Prize laureate, for her efforts to, well, stand up to the government in the Philippines, which was rather authoritarian and made life difficult for her. But she has some inspiration in what she's got to say. So, Ms. Mill, why don't we cue that up?
You know, when the Cambridge Analytica scandal broke, and this is, I go back to that original sin, part of the reason these illiberal leaders are being elected democratically is because of the corruption of our information ecosystem,
yeah,
of social media, which rewards lies, hate, and anger and fear, right? So in Cambridge Analytica scandal, the Americans had the most number of compromised accounts, but the Philippines had the second most number of compromised accounts, right? So
yep.
This is where our similarities are here. So thank you for remembering, and also look at our experience for what is coming up in the days ahead.
Yeah, and that's why the Philippines is important, because we have experience. You know, we could talk about Italy and Germany and things like that, but the Philippines is structurally similar to the United States and much more recent for us to remember. One of the things that's happening, we're hearing about it in the Department of Justice, we're hearing about it in the CIA, the intelligence community, and amongst journalists. Some people are getting ready to leave, meaning getting out of their professions. They don't want the hassle. And it's not that we will all maybe face arrest warrants like you did, but audits, harassment, that sort of thing. Talk to the people out there who are watching us as journalists, as lawyers, as bureaucrats, as intelligence officers, as FBI people. What do you have to say to them in this moment?
Look, again, a similar pattern. We had progressives leaving the government when President Duterte came in 2016, leaving institutions, businessmen. This is about power and money. Like, let's not make any mistakes. It's not about ideology. It is about power and money. And what happened, though, is that these institutions crumbled within 6 months. And look at what happened to us in the media. I mean, journalists should be prepared for what's coming, right? We had in 2016, bottom-up attacks on social media, meta-narratives like journalist equals criminal. And then top-down, it came down in 2017 with legal cases. And it's President Duterte used the tax agency. You've had a threat to use the tax agency. It was a vindictive government. We had a senator who was jailed for almost 7 years, Laila de Lima, the woman, the senator who went after the corruption and the killings of then President Duterte. And she, and during that time period, was unseated from the Senate and was jailed. She just recently got out of jail. So these are things, just law, rule of law becomes incredibly important because it is death by a thousand cuts. You will normalize certain things. And I think the most important part is do not normalize, right? Tim Snyder wrote this in his book, but in How to Stand Up to a Dictator, I mean, I came up with several things that we did that you don't know that you're doing it when you're in the middle of it, right? The first is really, what do we have as journalists, as citizens in a democracy? Values. What's important? You have to be transparent. You have to stay committed to those values. The phrase we use, because we didn't want to take sides, right? This was this whole idea of we're not taking sides.
Right.
But you're on the side of facts, right? So what we did is we used this phrase, hold the line. This is the line of the Constitution. Philippine Constitution is patterned after the United States. So we said we are not going to voluntarily move back. And the government used legal cases, tried to bulldoze us. Threats, intimidation, fear works wonders. And power, businesses, you know, in some ways, a corrupt government becomes easier to deal with because it's transactional.
Sure.
Everything becomes transactional. But you forget the good part of humanity, right? Like, and that's one of the things we didn't forget. Our community stayed around us, helped us with crowdfunding because our legal cases brought, you know, I mean, over $1 million in a little over a year that we had to spend on legal fees. So do not lose hope. You have to build community, come out into the real world. In many ways, I find the unending discussions about how we got to where we are. We've been factionalized. You, Ali, you've been doing this. The technology that rules us, that connects us, is corrupting us. And it has led to, as in many parts of the world, people electing illiberal leaders democratically. Yep. And now 71% of the world, that's as of January this year, 71%, we're near the tail end. The United States could be the tipping point. So last on this one, you asked, you know, so what do we do? It's collaborate, 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 right? You reach across, you stand by your values, hold the line. The other phrase I used a lot is embrace your fear. The reason we could keep going was because we imagined the worst case scenarios and workflowed them and drilled them. In the case of a potential shutdown for Rappler, we did quarterly drills for our entire team because we were going to keep doing our jobs.
Wow.
And the worst case scenario didn't happen. So fingers crossed, right?
Yep.
But you got to keep doing your job.
It's amazing. I talked to Tim last night and he said similar things like holding the line. Don't let them convince you you've changed. You're the same person you were 2 weeks ago. They changed. The world has changed around you. You haven't changed. Hold your values. And he said the same thing. Collaborate. Find new avenues in which to collaborate and find like-minded people who are prepared to defend democracy. It's not about ideology. There's nothing else about it. You don't have to agree with anybody on other policy matters. Are you going to stand together to defend democracy? Honestly, Maria, you've changed my entire outlook of my day. I needed this conversation. Our viewers needed this conversation. Thank you. Thanks for your bravery.
I found it a bit discouraging that she was talking about how things went south in the first 6 months when Duterte took over. But, you know, there's a happy ending here. They stuck together. They fought back. And, you know, she's still there to tell the tale. So, yes, collaborate. We need to collaborate in the years to come to keep bad things from happening. And one thing we do need to do in the future is come up with a better way of getting information to people. We've been talking on this program for years about how it is that social media has had a terrible effect on traditional news sources, which themselves have problems, but, well, are superior to the alternative in many cases. Writing about this in Salon.com, Amanda Marcotte noted that the mainstream media is rapidly losing its influence over American politics. She notes that's one of the central lessons of this 2024 election, noting that when given an explicit choice, most Americans actually prefer Democratic policies on health care, abortion, wages, family leave, taxation, and the economy. Polls from earlier this year, in fact, found that people who consume news from journalistic outlets, like newspapers, network news programs, and news websites, overwhelmingly plan to vote for the Democratic candidate. But, of course, there's a huge but here. Roughly half the country now consumes an all-propaganda media diet from Fox News, TikTok, Instagram, X, right-wing podcasts, and what their MAGA friends and family tell them. Marcotte notes that these sources immerse their audiences in a separate reality of misinformation, resentment, and conspiracy theories in which vaccines are dangerous, scientists are evil, America is a hellhole overrun by criminals and vicious migrants, Ukraine isn't worth saving, and the economy is in the toilet. She notes that progressives are often accused of looking down at working-class voters, but it's Donald Trump and his allies who see the, quote, poorly educated, unquote, as Trump calls them, as gullible yahoos who are stupid enough to believe their lies. When voters are bathed in false information, they often make bad choices. Now, in this program, we've been talking for years about how it is consolidation in the media, the corporatization of the media has reduced the variety of news that can come your way. And, of course, the bottom completely fell out of that as we moved into social media in the past decade. And I would note that this problem is compounded by the fact that AI, as it gets better and better, is able to produce, well, fake videos, fake photos, fake stories that are really hard to tell from the real ones. Not that Americans appear to spend a great deal of time fact-checking, but if you do, you can generally work out what is nonsense. I was over at my neighbor's a few days ago, and, they consume a lot of TV news over there, a lot more than I do, but I caught a show on one of the local programs showing how here in the Bay Area, in fact, in my hometown, a woman had been hijacked by someone who took her image, and she'd posted some videos. And someone came along, took her videos, and reworked them, and had her saying all kinds of things that she never said. Now, when they put up the actual video compared to the AI construct, it was possible to see that there was a little more detail in the original video. But, boy, if you weren't diligent, you might not notice. The program stated that one of the ways people can counter this, and of course we're going to see a lot more of this in the future, one way to counter this is to ask somebody to go on Zoom where they're talking to you live. And you can further deduce who is faking you by asking them to wave their hand in front of their face. Apparently AI has a lot of trouble with that, although I'm sure they're going to work on it and improve the issue. But they did note that when you wave your hand in front of your face, the AI will sometimes put the wrong number of fingers on your hand, which should be a dead giveaway. Now, not necessarily to the MAGA crowd, but, to most of us. Now, to expand upon this topic, I should probably dig out an article from The Atlantic from 2 years ago, which I don't remember, Mr. Miller, whether we talked about this or not. The piece was by Jonathan Haidt, H-A-I-D-T. It was titled After Babel, with the subheadline, How Social Media Dissolved the Mortar of Society and Made America Stupid. I'm pretty sure this is available online if you're interested, and I think you should be, and I think you should check this out because we don't have time to go this in great detail. But obviously the thrust of an article about how social media is making America stupider is even more important in 2024 than it was 2 years ago. It was predicted 2 years ago in this piece that things are going to get worse, and, well, to quote from the piece, in a 2018 interview, Steve Bannon, the advisor to Donald Trump, said that the way to deal with the media is to flood the zone with crap. He was describing the fire hose of falsehood tactic pioneered by Russian disinformation programs to keep Americans confused, disoriented, and angry. But back in 2018, there was an upper limit to the amount of crap available because all of it had to be created by a person, other, of course, than some low-quality stuff produced by bots. But now, artificial intelligence is close to enabling the limitless spread of highly believable disinformation. It's noted that the AI program GPT-3 is already so good you can give it a topic and a tone, and it will spit out as many essays as you like, typically with perfect grammar and a surprising level of coherence. I do need to inject it. When I was talking to one of our longtime correspondents, Donald Rose, he was goofing around while speaking with me and asked the AI he was working with to produce a radio program that was talking about this radio program. And as I listened to it, it sounded amazingly coherent at first. After a while, it got sort of crazy. But what was amazing was that in a matter of seconds, it could spit something like that out. Later on in the piece, looking for solutions, it was noted that we can never return to the way things were in the pre-digital age. The norms, institutions, and forms of political participation that developed during the long era of mass communication are not going to work well now that technology has made everything so much faster and much more multidirectional. And when, of course, when bypassing professional gatekeepers has become so easy. They did have three suggestions in the piece to deal with what's happening and try and keep a democratic society floating. And the three things suggested were that we need to harden democratic institutions, to reform social media, and to prepare the next generation for what's about to happen. Now, of course, the devil's in the details in the description of all of these things, and unfortunately, we lack the time to really delve into them at great length. But dear listener, you can do this for yourself, and we encourage you to do so. And I always wonder when I make suggestions like that over the air, how many people take me up on it? But doggone it, we are actually out of time. We may return to this article in the future, and then again, we may not. There's a lot to talk about. And we're going to try and talk about some things. We're not going to go and throw the towel in quite yet. Not unless they come knocking on our door. I'm not sure I'm going to answer that.
Don't.
Our thanks to Mark Mattingly, a teacher with considerable wisdom, and look forward to speaking with Stephen Harper in the weeks to come to get more of a legal perspective on what the hell's going on. Anyway, this program was produced by Edward McMillan, who's doing all he can to put on a happy face. You've been listening to Radio Parallax. I'm Douglas Everett, and I think all of us should do what we can to put on a happy face. We'll see you soon.
Why look so awfully tragic? Put on a happy face. Smiling can work like magic. Put on a happy face. Take off the gloomy mask of tragedy. It's not your style. You look so good that you'll be glad you decided to smile. Pick out a pleasant outlook.